genes survive within organisms. And genes producing reproductively successful traits in those organisms flourish. Sort of like, oh, what would be an analogy? Armor helps a knight to preserve. The armor is the protective device, and it helps keep a knight alive in battle. So our bodies, or the bodies of any animal or plant, is the armor for the gene, helping the gene to survive and reproduce and make more of its kind. In a totally mechanistic process, Dawkins explains, selfish genes cause the gradual evolution in their host, or as he calls them, their robot organisms. Their survival, the survival of genes, is our purpose. To capture this, let me read a bit from Dawkins. When Dawkins writes up his theory, he writes it. He's a beautiful writer. He's a great expressor of his own ideas. His writings are quite popular. This is Dawkins' views of origin. In the beginning was a self-replicating molecule. And he goes on to write. The next important step, link in the argument, one that Darwin himself laid stress on, is competition. The primeval soup was not capable of supporting an infinite number of replicator molecules. Some of them may have discovered how to break up molecules of rival varieties of chemicals and to use the building blocks so released for making their own copies. Other replicators perhaps discovered how to protect themselves, either chemically or by building physical walls of protein around themselves. This may have been how the first living cell appeared. The replicators which survived were the ones that built survival machines for themselves to live in. Survival machines got bigger and more elaborate, and the process was progressive. Now they swarm in huge colonies, he's talking about the genes, safe inside gigantic lumbering robots. They are in you, they are in me. They created us, body and mind, and their preservation is the ultimate rationale for our existence. They have come a long way, those replicators. Now they go by the name of genes, and we are their survival mechanisms. Richard Dawkins describing his selfish gene theory and approach. Well, needless to say, this sort of thinking arouses a lot of controversy among people who are quite proud of themselves and their species. Critics counter, many within science, counter that organisms, not genes, interact with the environment. And therefore, evolution must involve organisms and environments, not just genes. This debate continues. Now, it logically leads, though, to the second level of debate that I mentioned at the beginning. The debate that goes on among social scientists about the applications of biological theories, evolution theory, to human behavior, human nature. This surrounds, in general, the extension of neo-Darwinian thinking to social scientific thought. And it primarily focuses on what are called sociobiology and evolutionary psychology. Put simply, does biology control behavior? Or, as Time magazine put it in a cover article not too long ago, is adultery in our genes? Is the various activities we do, our social behaviors, are they genetically programmed? Well, Harvard naturalist E.O. Wilson pioneered this field during the 1970s based on his lifelong study of social insects, particularly ants. Wilson's 1975 book, Sociobiology, The New Synthesis, notice the echo to the neo-Darwinian synthesis, the modern synthesis, in that book explores the biological basis of social behavior by looking at what would cause success. Success requires not just survival, as Darwin pushed it, but also reproduction. So what sort of biological traits would foster survival and reproduction. Let's use Wilson's own words to sort of capture that. The way he puts it at the beginning, right at the beginning, he starts out by writing,